हाय, आई एम सत्यजीत सिंह प्रिय। आई एम गोइंग टू रिकॉर्ड सन्स एंड लवर्स ऑथोराइज्ड बाई डी एच लॉरेंस। फर्स्टली, लाइफ ऑफ डी एच लॉरेंस, बर्थ एंड पेरेंटेज। डेविड हर्बर्ट लॉरेंस वॉज बॉर्न ऑन 11 सितंबर 1885 इन द माइनिंग विलेज ऑफ ईस्टवुड, नॉटिंगशायर। ही वॉज द फोर्थ चाइल्ड ऑफ हिज पेरेंट्स। हिज फादर Arthur Lawrence was a coal miner with no intellectual ambitions. He lived a simple life, obeying his impulses and instincts, enjoying work down in the pit in day and his wine in the pub at night. Lawrence portrays him as an unfeeling drunkard in his novel Sons and Lovers. Not a fair and impartial portrait. Lawrence's father had insatiable thirst for life and for pleasure. Lawrence's mother was Lydia. She had been a teacher and was superior to her husband in both social standing and manners. She was the daughter of Nottinghamshire silk manufacturer. The husband and wife were temperamentally unsuited, and their life was unhappy because of unending quarrels. Mrs. Lydia was often outraged when her husband came back home drunk. She had married him in a certain romantic mood in which the bitter realities of life were not taken into consideration. She married him on December 27, 1875, little knowing what it was to be a coal miner's wife. She hated her husband's habit of drinking, his uncouth and unpolished ways and dialect, and never allowed her children to speak like their father. She would not allow her sons at any cost to be influenced by their father. Therefore, she alienated the children from the father, trained them to shun him, hate him, and not to let themselves be influenced a bit by his wild tongue and crude manners. Lawrence's early life. Lawrence grew up in the harsh, degrading atmosphere of poverty and alcoholism, and at an early age he succumbed to pneumonia which weakened his resistance and paved the way for an incipient tuberculosis. Always frail but intentionally studious, he was encouraged by his mother in his desire for knowledge, and when he was 13 won a scholarship from his council to Nottingham High School, where he remained for 3 years. On leaving school, he obtained a job with a firm of surgical goods manufacturers. But finding his dull and wholly unsatisfying, he soon gave it up to become a pupil teacher at Eastwood. In 1903, at the age of 18, he entered the training department of University College, Nottingham. And on obtaining his teacher's certificate 2 years later, he was for a short time a teacher in a school at Croydon near London. His love and friendship with J.C. Chambers. Lawrence became a teacher and remained in his profession for some time. With Lawrence, the teacher grew, Lawrence the writer and the man. At this stage, he published a group of poems. His first novel, The White Peacock, was also written during this period, means 1911. The trespasser came out in 1912. Soon his mother died. His suffering from pneumonia and the doctor's advice to leave the place compelled him to give up his teaching career. Meanwhile, a girl named Jessie Chambers, who lived at Hagg's Farm, about 2 miles north of Eastwood, had begun to influence him deeply. Together, they read poetry and novels and discussed philosophy and painting. They would go out in the fields, enjoying books and each other's company. Jessie encouraged Lawrence to read the literary classics and to write. It was she who got his poems published first of all. His friendship with Jessie became an emotional necessity, but his mother would not allow him to achieve a satisfactory relationship with this girl. Lawrence finally decided not to marry her as a duty to his mother. He loved her, but could never seek physical consummation with her. In her memoirs, Jessie shows Lawrence as a Puritan, afraid of sex, disturbed by the difference he felt to exist between physical and spiritual love. Lawrence's elopement and marriage with Freda. In April 1912, Lawrence called on Ernest Weekly, who was professor of French at the University College Nottingham. Fair Lawrence had studied some 9 years earlier. This led to a meeting with Weekly's wife, Freda, and Lawrence instantly fell in love with her. Freda regarded her marriage as a failure and was unhappy and dissatisfied. The attraction was mutual, and a few weeks later, the pair threw discretion to the winds and went off together to Merz, Germany, where Freda's father was military governor. Shocked by his daughter's behavior, the Baron at first insisted that Freda must part company with Lawrence. Nothing was settled. Lawrence was very unhappy. He had to quit Merz because the German police, mistaking him for an English officer and a spy, wished to arrest him. Probably Freda's father wanted all this, but the lovers united again. They were married in London after Freda was granted divorce in July 1914. But their married life was not very happy. Though they often quarrelled, yet on the whole their relationship was a healthy and natural one. Lawrence Wanderings. Throughout the rest of his life, especially after the First World War, Lawrence remained in exile, moving up from place to place. It was a horrible time that Lawrence experienced during the war years. He was a restless soul, and his restlessness took him to Germany, Italy, Australia, America, and Mexico. While traveling through Germany and Italy, he wrote his third novel, Sons and Lovers. To quote Anthony West, "From the time of his elopement, Lawrence never belonged to any place, never was part of any community. He was a rootless wanderer in Bohemia, and however hard he tried to merge himself into a place and its life, he remained an outsider who would be off again when the wind blew." His illness and death. At the end of February 1922, Lawrence and his wife sailed for Australia, and the novel Kangaroo, 1923, was written in South Wales. But his health continued to deteriorate, and he welcomed his doctor's suggestion that the climate of New Mexico might prove of benefit. So he, along with his wife, arrived in New Mexico in September 1922. During 1924, he suffered from an acute illness. So he returned to Italy in 1926 and lived for 2 years near Florence. But his health steadily worsened. And on 22nd May 1930, he died in a sanatorium in south of France of the disease with which he had fought for so many years. His last years were spent in writing prolifically. There is hardly any branch of literature which he did not enrich with his writings. From his pen-flowed novels, many volumes of poems, essays, critical studies, and short stories, as his end drew nearer, he wrote almost fervorously to communicate as a troubled civilization his own vision of life. Through his novel, is recommended as a new way of life which would transform the wasteland that the modern world is. Despising excessive intellectualism as being destructive of the vital part of man's personality, Lawrence preached people to live by instincts and to obey their impulses. "My great religion," he said, "is a belief in the blood, the flesh, as being wiser than the intellect. We can go wrong in our minds, but what our blood feels and believes and says is always true." This was Lawrence's remedy for the emotionally starved man of today. The works of D.H. Lawrence. D.H. Lawrence, a versatile genius. D.H. Lawrence was a prolific writer who, in the 19 years between his first published novel and his death, produced over 40 volumes of novels and short stories, poetry and drama, and treatises and essays on the art of the novelist, and on a variety of miscellaneous subjects. Not a year passed without the publication of something important from his pen. He was a versatile genius who could excel in many fields. He was a great poet, a great short story writer, as well as a critic of great insight and penetration. However, it is as a novelist that he is chiefly remembered today. A study of his novels reveals a gradual maturing of his powers and the evolution of his genius. His chief novels are as follows. First, The White Peacock. It was the first novel of Lawrence, which at once caught the public eye. This novel is autobiographical in style. It was printed in 1911 when Lawrence was only 26 years old, and hence the novel displays considerable immaturity. Its setting is a mining area Lawrence knew so well. The story is narrated in first person by its central figure, Cyril Birdsall, a sensitive young man, a pen portrait of Lawrence himself. His friend George Sexton falls in love with his sister Letty, who, however, jilts him and marries a wealthy young man. Thus, the story is about unhappy human relationship existing between the two sexes, the theme of all the major novels of the writer. We are advised, be a good animal, turn to your natural instincts. Though it lacks the depth and seriousness of his later works, it has much of his remarkable gift for fine description of nature and lyrical emotion. It was for this reason that the novel took the town and was regarded as the most astonishing first novel of the first half of the century. Second, The Trespasser. The Trespasser was published in 1912. It is a work of slight importance. As usual, its theme also is male-female relationship. Its setting is London rather than the familiar mining area, and this accounts to a very great extent for its failure. Third, Sons and Lovers. Sons and Lovers was published in 1913 and at once raised its author to the first rank of English novelists. It is a powerful masterpiece. It is largely autobiographical, and its setting is the mining area, Nottinghamshire, the novelist knew so well. It is an extremely powerful novel of deep sincerity, which studies with penetrating insight the relationship between the sons and the mothers. It is along the lines of the well-known Freudian theory of Oedipus complex. Love and hatred have been presented in this novel with naked intensity, but neither of these emotions is yet magnified to the inhuman violence which found expression in his later works. The novel is also rich in lyrical descriptions of natural beauty. It is the first psychoanalytical novel in the English language. Fourth, The Rainbow. The Rainbow was published in 1915 and is the least autobiographical of his major novels. It again treats of the conflict between man and woman. It is predominantly a novel about marriage, and its principal characters are women. It studies the family history of a Brangwens, spread over three generations. In this novel, he makes a new beginning. Under the influence of new psychology, he studies the inner life of his principal characters and is no longer interested in merely recording things and sensations. The new type of novel required a new style, and hence the old style of The Sons and Lovers, a novel largely traditional, has been given up. Thus, The Rainbow is a symbol of a happy and bright future. The novel was suppressed since it was considered obscene and immoral. The novelist was shocked that such a serious and profound piece of work should be treated with such scant respect and recognition. Fifth, Woman in Love. Woman in Love could be published only with great difficulty in 1921, since no publisher was now willing to bring out the works of a novelist considered so obscene. The novel is a sequel to The Rainbow. However, it is possible to follow it and enjoy it even without having first gone through its counterpart. Woman in Love is again a novel about marriage, and it goes to the extent of questioning the very institutions of marriage. The soul storms in this novel acquire epic proportions. The theme of the novel may be defined as modern love experience. The novelist hatred of industrialization is here seen in a note of revolt against the machines. The novel depicts the conflict between the owner and the miners, and we are told that the owner not only lost his own soul, but also gave the miners an evil satisfaction which took the very heart out of them. It is an important novel for a student of Lawrence's view on human life. Sixth, The Iron's Rod. The Iron's Rod, published in 1922, is also a powerful work of great significance. It is Lawrence's mature work of great stylistic quality. It is a semi-autobiographical novel with English and Italian background. as Becker puts it. It is a book which shows by the grace of the narrative and the beauty of the descriptive passages the tranquilizing results of his stay in Italy. Aaron, the chief figure, is tired of his wife, Letty, and seeks self-fulfillment through intimate relationship with a man, Lily, towards whom he is passionately attracted. But this relationship with man is as unsatisfactory as was his relationship with woman. The real solution to all such difficulties of human relationship, as suggested by the novelist, is to be found in sheer finished singleness. It is this truth which Aaron realizes only in the end. Seventh, The Kangaroo. The Kangaroo, which was published in 1923, results from his experiences during the war and his later visit to Australia. Lawrence called it a thought adventure. It is the closest approximation to the discussion novel of today. No doubt, the discussion of the world situation often overweights the novel, but it depicts the Australian background with great vividness and force. In this novel, the marriage question is again connected with relationship between man and man. A relationship with women is found unsatisfactory, as in the Aaron's Rod, because of their desire for mastery, and that with men because of their lack of emotional response. The hero Somers tries political action and finds it equally unsatisfactory, as it does not change men. It is in this novel that Lawrence introduces for the first time his dark gods, which he later identifies with the primitive pagan gods of Mexico. 8th, The Plumed Serpent. The Plumed Serpent, published in 1926, is another of Lawrence's discussion novels and results from his visit to Mexico. The Mexico life and landscape have been dealt with at length. The novel is the best instance of its author's stress on the values of the primitive as opposed to the civilized. Letty, the heroine, finds self-fulfillment by joining a primitive religious sect which seeks to restore the dark gods and expels Jesus and the new god. Thus, there is an exaltation of the primitive pagan religion as the only true religion. Christianity is dead, and the early religion is all the only living religion. The novel affirms its author's faith in the religion of the blood. 9th, Lady Chatterley's Lover. The much maligned and abused Lady Chatterley's Lover marks a new orientation in Lawrence's career as an author. It was first published in Florence in 1929, but was suppressed in England on grounds of immorality and obscenity. Lawrence again returns to the theme of his earlier novel, that is, the meaning of sex and its role in the life of man. He gives complete and uninhibited expression to his views on sex and its religious significance to him. The emotional and physical experience of Mellers, the lover of Lady Chatterley, whose husband has been crippled by war, have been described with a compelling mastery. The novelist shows how man can realize a richer and fuller life by abandoning intellect and letting himself be guided by his instinct. It is a novel of the phallic consciousness as against the mental consciousness of today. It is Lawrence's last attack on the conventional notion of sex, which he regarded as puerile. He regarded the work as very truly moral, as a sincere attempt to make the sex relation valid and precious instead of shameful. 10th, The Man Who Died. This powerful novel, published in 1930, is Lawrence's ultimate masterpiece, but it was little noticed at the time of its first publication. It is perfect and final reconciliation of the elements that warred within him, a discovery of atonement on the threshold of death, a vision of apocalyptic harmony between Osiris and Christ, according to A.C. Ward. Conclusion. We may not often agree with the views of Lawrence, but to read his novel is a rich and rewarding experience. Lawrence died young, but such was his genius that he has left a permanent impression of the English novel. The novel in England could never again be the same. Treatment of sex in Lawrence novels. Conditioning factors. Lauren's attitude towards sex was conditioned by his early environment and upbringing. His parents' marriage was not a success, and the child grew up in an atmosphere of domestic discord and strife, with the result that all through his life he considered the relationship between man and woman as a form of conflict rather than a natural expression of harmony. Further, the mother, dissatisfied with the husband, turned to the son for emotional fulfillment, and the son too loved her almost like a lover. This had two consequences. First, mother fixation came in the way of Lauren's relationship with the other woman, and he could not achieve satisfactory emotional adjustment with any of them. Secondly, he wanted to be mothered. He became abnormally sensitive to any threatened domination by women, and he countered it with vehemence, even with violence. It made him an anti-feminist, one who came to regard the feminist movement as an attempt to female domination. Indeed, as D. Neil puts it, he went so far as to trace the misery occasioned by economic disequilibrium to the violation of male supremacy so essential for harmony. Even after his marriage with Freda Weekly, he did not escape the sex conflict. He sought in her both a mother substitute and a woman who he could dominate. Freda was neither, and their marriage gave him little peace of mind. Further, it was through his German wife that he was introduced to Otto Wigner's theory of sex psychology. All these different factors conditioned his treatment of sex when he took to writing novels. Sex conflict, its causes. Sex conflict looms large in the novels of D.H. Lawrence. Thus, the conflict and soul storms of sex assume an almost epic proportion in The Rainbow and its sequel, Woman in Love. There is an attempt to express the ideal sexual relationship between man and woman in terms of its opposite. Men and women can find fulfillment in their union with each other, but his elemental urge to fulfillment is obstructed by differences of temperament, differences in the power and quality of love, conflict of wills and faulty emotional attitudes. One great cause of conflict lies in the fact that a woman is fulfilled through childbearing, while the man continues to crave fulfillment through the woman, or the conflict results from overpossessiveness or the desire for domination. This is the note which is struck in the novels of Lawrence and is seen at its most striking in Sons and Lovers. While Miriam wants to suck the very soul of Paul and Clara wants to possess his body, Paul is unwilling to give himself wholly to either of them. Paul Morrell is a typical of Lawrence man in his unwillingness to give himself fully to the woman, whereas Miriam is typical of his woman in her pallium to absorb the man completely, to leave nothing of him over, unexhausted by their love. Bitch. Further, Lawrence's insight into the psychology of the emotionally possessive mother is now here, better shown than in the study of the conflict between Miriam and Mrs. Morrell for the soul of Paul. The mother image casts its dark shadow on the relationship of Paul and Miriam and comes in the way of satisfactory emotional adjustment. To the novelist, it seems that, like him, all other men are struggling against the tyranny of the female, who wishes to exhaust in the sex relations all the spiritual capacities of the male. He sees the male and female principles in the universe involved in a continual conflict, a battering and tearing of each other, a devouring of each other, and hence so much of suffering and misery all around. Thus, the novelist's deep concern is with the maladjustment of life, the suppression, the deformities. His distinctive material is really the same as that of Dr. Freud and the modern psycholinguistic school. The law of polarity. Thus, various factors outlined above prevent a satisfactory sexual adjustment, which Lawrence considers essential for the fulfillment of the individual. How is his adjustment then to be achieved? For this purpose, Lawrence lays down the law of polarity, or the reconciliation of opposites for self-fulfillment. Any thesis or the balancing of opposite is the law of nature. night with day, light with darkness, the sun with the moon, and the male with the female. Man is the sun and woman is the moon, and the two must balance each other for their mutual fulfillment. However, a satisfactory adjustment can be achieved only when men and women recognize the essential otherness of each other. Each has his or her own unique self. This uniqueness must be recognized and respected. Without such recognition, there can be no satisfactory polarization or coming together of opposites, which the male and female are by their very nature. There should be no attempt at domination, no overpossessiveness, no sucking the soul of others. Thus, the overpossessive Mrs. Morel ruins first her own happiness because she fails to recognize the otherness of her husband and tries to reform him and in the process destroys him. Similarly, both she and Miriam fail to recognize otherness of Paul. They want the whole of him, and the result is suffering and tragedy for all concerned. Birkin and Ursula, in Woman in Love, achieve sexual harmony because there is no attempt at domination but a recognition of otherness. Lawrence constantly stresses that physical union with the other sex is essential for integrated personal development. But he stresses the separateness of man and woman in union. There must be two in one, always two in one. An equilibrium, a pure balance of two single beings as the stars balance in each other. This separateness in union is often stressed by the use of the dance symbol. Relationship of the sexes must be a reconciliation of opposites and not domination of one by the other. Sex, its free and frank treatment. In nothing is Lawrence more modern than in his free and frank treatment of sex. There is nothing in him of the Victorian prudery and inhibition with regard to sex. The result was that he was misunderstood and charged with obscenity and immorality. Even such an eminent critic as W. Lewis condemns Sons and Lovers as a wallowing mass of sex idolatry and mother love. His The Rainbow and the Lady Chatterley's Lover were proscribed for being pornographic. This shocked and amazed Lawrence. No doubt, he is guilty of some indiscretion as when he makes naked men admire each other's physical beauty as they go out bathing, or when he makes Lady Chatterley use the rough language of the bar and the smoking room. However, Lawrence is neither a voluptuary nor a sensualist, neither does he make sex the be-all and the end-all of human existence. To him, not only was sex the way woman fulfills her being and man on one of his chief creative functions, but the sexual experience was also a door to new realms of consciousness and initiations into divine mysteries, the mysteries of the world that is closed behind us. Sex experience. Its spiritual nature. Again and again in his writings, especially in his treatises Fantasia of the Unconsciousness, Psychology of the Unconscious, etc., he insists on the sacred nature of sex and the religious element in its consummation. Even T.S. Eliot in his After Strange Gods acknowledges that he always raised sex to the spiritual level. He clearly distinguishes between the lower and the higher planes of being and consciousness, the sensual and the spiritual, and everywhere it is on the spiritual significance of sex that he lays his emphasis. He is realistic enough to recognize that man is both body and soul, and therefore the body too must be not denied. Rather, the two must work in harmony. Physical union with the opposite sex releases personal tides of ecstasy, which open the window into the spiritual. This moment of mystical ecstasy in sexual union is described in the Sons and Lovers. It was as if he, Paul, and the stars and dark hairy bees and Clara were licked up in immense tongue of flame, which rose onwards and upwards. The physical is thus sublimated into the spiritual. Neither physical love nor spiritual love alone is sufficient. There must be a union of the two or vital fulfillment. Sex and the creative arc. In his Fantasy of Unconscious, Lawrence rebukes Freud and other psychoanalysts who attribute a sexual motive to all human activity. He tells us that when man loses his deep sense of purposive creative activity, he feels lost and is lost. When he makes the sexual consummation the supreme consummation, even in his secret soul, he falls into the beginning of despair. And further, we are told, with sex as the one expected prime motive, world drifts into despair and anarchy. He believes that the essentially religious or creative motive is the first motive of all human activity, and the sexual motive is only secondary. It must not be accepted as the prime motive, for the result would be despair and anarchy. Love itself must be subordinated to some purposive passion, some creative ideal, motive, etc. Assert sex as predominant fulfillment and you get the collapse of living purpose in man. You get anarchy. Conclusion. Thus, Lawrence's novels are saturated in sex, but Lawrence cannot be regarded as a sensualist of voluptuary writer. This type of criticism is a false accusation. Baker rightly defends Lawrence's approach to sex. To him, not only sex, the way woman fulfills her being, and man one of his chief creative functions, for which reason he always extolled marriage, but the sexual experience was a door to new realm of consciousness and initiation into divine mysteries, the mystery of the other world that is closed behind us. Lawrence prose style. The prose style of D.H. Lawrence in his novels can be seen in three aspects, namely, first, the narrative and descriptive prose, precise, lucid but unvarnished, which occurs in passages descriptive of persons and their environment, their business and hobbies in the everyday life. Second, the evocative and poetical passages marked by intensity of feelings, richness of verbal texture and appropriate rhythm, which make these passages fine specimens of lyrical prose. And third, emotional prose, that is the prose in which description is impregnated with the fire of emotion. Descriptive prose. Lawrence's descriptive prose is often satirical but forceful. His style is vigorous and forceful and is enlivened by satirical flashes, particularly against women. Lawrence's descriptions are marked with realism. His descriptive power is best seen in his painting of natural scenery. The following passage from Sons and Lovers will suffice to illustrate Lawrence's descriptive prose. The sun was going down. Every open evening, the hills of Derbyshire was blazed over with red sunset. Mrs. Morrell watched the sun sink from the glistening sky, leaving a soft flower blue overhead, while the western space went red, as if all the fire had swum down here, leaving the balcony flawless blue. With Mrs. Morrell, it was one of those still moments when the small frosts vanish and the beauty of things stands cut. In picturing nature, Lawrence approaches close to poesy. He equally well excels in the handling of the coarse dialects of Australia in the Blow in the Bush and the Nottinghamshire mining village in Sons and Lovers. But if we are to judge Lawrence's style by the standards of the meticulous artist with finely attuned ear and an eye for accuracy of detail of grammar, we shall often find him lacking. Often the reader will be worried by the repetition of the same thought and language in long passages. He adopts the trick of telling us the same thing and harping on the same words over again. Gerald and Bullet. This practice may appear pleasing to his admirers, but is likely to prove exasperating to many sensitive readers. The lyrical approach. Lawrence was gifted with the genius of a poet. Therefore, his style has a remarkable poetic lyrical quality. To quote Bonamy Daubry, he is primarily a poet. It is as a poet that he must not only be judged, but also tested and enjoyed. Lawrence is a lyrical or romantic as Meredith of Hardy. His style has the intensity of emotion, spontaneity of expression and fluency of movement. A lyrics is a composition in which a lyrical poet is personally involved in his experience. Lawrence's style has all these qualities and lyrical intensity. His words seem hot and quivering on the page. It is as a lyric poet that he speaks of Walter Morel's sensuous flame of life, of his sensuous warmth, of Miriam's rhapsodic movement, of her awakening the artist in Paul, urging the life warmth in him into intensity like a fight heat, or of her bringing forth to him his imagination. Like a lyricist, he concerned with the feelings and sensations of his characters. It is the moment of life itself which captures and communicates. The interplay of feelings as Morel and Mrs. Morel quarrel, or the ecstasy of Miriam at the sight of Firouz Bhus, are instances in point. Emotional atmosphere. Lawrence takes us right inside his characters, their emotions, feelings, institutions and psyche. Whether it is the landscape in the Isle of Wight in the Trespasser or the coal pits near the village of Stoude, Lawrence described all of them as if he had not just observed them but realized them emotionally. His language is charged with emotions as he begins to describe the sunrise or the blowing of a rose. At such moments he writes like a poet, phrases such as the bell cast flawless blue, mountain ash buried across the field, etc. And the description of the sunset in the novel could have been written only by a poet. Also mark the poeticality of the passages such as the following. First, the tall white lilies were reeling in the moonlight and the air was charged with their perfume as with a presence. Mrs. Morel gasped slightly in fear. She touched the big pallid flowers on their petals, then shivered. They seemed to be stretching in the moonlight. Second, all the life of Miriam's body was in her eyes, which were usually dark as a dark church, but could flame with light like a conflagration. Her face is scarcely ever altered from its look of brooding. She might have been one of the women who went with Mary when Jesus was dead. Since Lawrence wants to understand life through instinct and not through reason, his primary concern is with the emotions of his characters. He places them in an atmosphere overcharged with emotion and lets them come in direct touch with each other. Then his men and women cease to be men and women in flesh. They become the concrete manifestation of certain emotions, or they are conceived of as electric phenomena, releasing food of electric passion which flows from one to another, or they are conceived of as vibrations going forth unconscious and unknown and causing a vibration of response. And Lawrence employs adequately a lyrical style surcharged with emotions to catch and communicate these vibrations. Use of symbols and images. Lawrence's prose style is marked with abundant use of symbols and images. In this aspect, he shows himself more as a poet than as a prose writer. Symbols are quite frequent and functional in his novels. He uses not only word symbols such as coal pits, ash tree swing, etc., but also symbolic scenes, as Mark Spilka says. The symbolic scenes are extremely literal and the symbols seem to function as integral strands in the web of emotional tension. For example, the coal pits in Sons and Lovers symbolize a particular attitude toward life. The descent and ascent of the coal pits become symbolic of the sexual rhythm, or the rhythm of sleep and awaking, or of life and death. Likewise, the swing symbol is also important. The ash tree outside the residence of the Morels is the symbol of all the dark, mysterious forces of nature which hover round man and are the instruments of tragedy. The flower picking scene is also highly symbolic. In fact, Lawrence uses his symbols as material and focal expression of the powerful forces of nature and of the emotional attitude of his characters. Conclusion. Lawrence's prose style may fall short by the standards of a meticulous artist, but it is certainly the style of a poet. In other words, here we have the feel of life. This is the moment of life which he captures and communicates. Lawrence at the heart of the romantic poets who wrote with heart rather than with mind. His prose is therefore charged with life and energy. It quivers with the pulse beat of life and sends waves of warmth into the body and hearts of his readers. No other prose writer had captured so successfully as Lawrence the flickering, fluttering, leaping, smoldering, and burning human hearts in words.